Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hey, welcome to This Life, Bob. We now have our... Go ahead.
I don't have my headphones
say,
on.
Hold put on. Them on, buddy.
Oh, my gosh.
We have our friend Stephanie Wilder-Taylor in here today. Thank you so much for being here, Stephanie.
Thanks for having
and
me.
And you were just starting to tell Bob something.
Yeah,
I interrupted you.
I was trying not to be a fangirl. But yes, I saw your movie, and it was really... loved it. And then I immediately we got the soundtrack and got the T-shirt.
Oh,
and I wear the T-shirt
so
to the gym
it's
a lot
Bob
and to
monster.
School. And the principal of my kids' elementary school was like, "What's that T-shirt I see you wearing all the time?"
Bob and the Monster.
Oh
go check
gosh.
That out. Yeah.
Maybe Elvis needs to transfer to that.
You know, maybe
school.
We should get the maybe we should get the we should get the woman in here who
Kirda. She did a Devo documentary too that just came out last year.
She's a very good documentarian.
I mean, yeah, she is. Did you ever see the thing "We Live in Public"? You
no.
ever seen that?
What is
that
it?
She
no.
did about the guy who was obsessed. The first internet guy who created that hotel in New York that was all filmed in the mid-90s.
No idea.
It's called We Live in Public. You got to see it. That's another thing. She produced that movie.
But the...
I've never heard of that.
The fact that she was able to dig out old footage of us on the radio from the early mid-80s or something.
Yeah, yeah. It was great.
And I literally, he's there loaded on God knows what. And I'm like, holding on to my seat, like, oh, crap, what are we going to do with this guy? And I was not that sophisticated about drug treatment then. I couldn't have really helped you. I was sort of familiar with, but I wasn't deeply into
it. I had gone to the best. I'd gone to Hazelden. I should be well by now.
But I wouldn't have. I would not have known really to question that or understand why you weren't well. But in this thing, Bob gets in this little scene that they act out with claymation. Bob becomes very earnest with one of the callers, and he's literally, I say, hey, Bob, you make a great therapist. You'd be a great treatment professional someday if you just get your shit together.
Right.
And how she found that. It's so crazy.
It is really something. Well, there's a lot of people are just, you know, the 80s and the music scene in LA and New York was their college. It was that thing that you always refer back to and go, that was so great. Where in Los Angeles, you could go out, because I lived here too, and you could go out any night and see some of the greatest bands that became Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member bands that would play at a little bar of 100 people. Guns N' Roses and Jane's Addiction, the Chili Peppers and Fishbone and Dream Syndicate and Los Lobos and Blasters.
Which bar are you thinking
X. of? All the different ones. Raji's on Hollywood Boulevard. The
oh,
Roxy.
Yeah. I used to go see X.
Yeah,
all the time. I moved here in right after high school in 1984.
From where?
Oh, there you go.
Well, I sort of was raised here till I was 12, but then I moved around a little bit with my family, and then rather than go to college, I just wanted to get away from them and the East Coast. So at 18, with my friend who was 17, she dropped out of high school and we moved here, had an apartment right off of Hollywood Boulevard, Hollywood and El Cerrito Place.
Oh, my God.
Which is where the Stephen J. Cannell building is. And we used to walk down to, like, the Seven Seas.
Yeah, Seven Seas. I would DJ'd at Seven Seas.
You did?
Wow. Yeah.
For yeah.
Eddie Nash, baby.
So funny.
Go out to bars every single night. Club Lingerie and all those.
Lingerie, yeah.
All the bars and.
God, I remember Club Lingerie. I haven't thought of it. That was on Santa Monica, was it?
Or, yeah.
Sunset.
Sunset
yeah.
and Gower.
Yeah.
And so it was just such a magical time that people really, when they got on word on the internet that they were making this movie about Thelonious Monster, people really reached out.
Oh.
Somebody had the, obviously taped the radio shows. Tape. Remember, you got to understand this. In the 80s, people used to tape your radio show and then listen to it over and over again on a cassette.
Right.
And that's what that radio show is. Somebody had taped it on a cassette.
Wow. So crazy.
Can you imagine when something mattered so much instead of now when everything's instant? I mean, I get lost in a YouTube, you know, rabbit's hole all the time. I like go look at old bands and then it leads to another band. And then as you've been on YouTube for 2 hours watching things, you know, that you used to have to seek out and have community about, and you couldn't get the footage, and but you could remember what it was like. It was
share it with other people.
Remember when you used to have to watch a movie and sit through all the way through the credits to see the music credits? If you liked a song in a movie, sometimes you could never figure out what it was.
Yeah. Well, I went to the Meridian Quad Theater, and we used to go to movies and see two movies, right?
Yeah, double feature.
And then, but then we were 13, 14, we'd jump and see like three in a day.
We were talking about parenting. Parents would never leave. We would just be left off at the theater.
Yeah.
Seeing 5 hours, 6 hours, whatever.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, no problem.
No problem.
My mommy would drop me off with my younger sister and brother, and they were much younger than me. And yeah, just leave us for the whole afternoon watching kids' movies.
It's awesome. So, Stephanie, talk about your books and stuff. Talk about your stuff.
I've written...
Blogger, mom.
Yeah, written 5 books.
Wow.
First one was called Sippy Cups Are Not for Chardonnay.
There you go.
But that was before I quit drinking. So there was a lot of glorifying alcoholism.
Oh, wow.
I didn't call it that. Other people did. But just talking about the mom culture of... I wasn't talking about the mom culture of drinking. I was just saying that drinking is a fun thing to do as a new mom.
And you have a podcast with Lynette.
I do a podcast for crying out loud with Lynette, Adam's wife, Lynette.
Yeah.
And hosted my own show, Parental Discretion, for a couple seasons, available on... Somewhere.
So it's perfect that you're here. I don't know if you know, but I have a 5-year-old son. He's going through some troubles, and I think LA is so unique in that there's a child psychologist on every block.
What's,
you know what I mean?
What's going on?
He's in a pre-K and K combo class, mm-hmm. which is difficult. He came from one of the most loving, nurturing preschools called the Neighborhood School in the Valley.
Yeah.
Just, you know, three teachers to 11 kids, and everybody knows everybody, and it's mm-hmm. just like a family, to a public school, right? It's a good public school, but it's a public school, and it's like, you know, it's kind of crazy looking at a playground of a school.
How many kids are in his class?
23, with a main teacher and his teacher's aide.
Tell her what happened.
And so he's been gravitating towards the older kids, and at recess he wants to hang out even with the first graders who the kindergartners know, and they're kind of shunning him, so he's lashing out back at them and getting into physical altercations and made some threats. And so...
He's 5?
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of threats?
That he was going to get a knife and bring it to school and hurt one of the kids.
They called you in.
Oh, they've been calling us in since the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so now he's in play groups that are supervised by psychologists out in Westwood every Thursday night, and he's got his own psychologist and an MFT.
What are they telling you?
Same stuff that they tell everybody, you know what I mean? Child needs to know that they're loved and has boundaries and consequence and da-da-da. It's the same stuff we tell people in drug and treatment.
How was it in preschool? Did you notice was anything off in preschool?
In the beginning, and then he adjusted into it, right? Mm-hmm.
So nothing, like you didn't see any of that after he had adjusted into preschool?
No, nothing.
No, it's kind of an interesting... piece of this. It just occurs to me, not as it pertains to your son, but the conversation generally about a kid that becomes aggressive, is there's a whole contingent in our country that would go, well, that kid needs to have his ass whooped. He needs to be punished, like, you know, really shown who's in charge here.
You'd be shocked. As the parent, you feel like your child is evil, bad. That's the perception. That's how I feel at the school. It's a hippie yuppie school. I feel like our child is being marked as bad or wrong or evil. And it's adults doing this to a five-year-old kid. We're trying our hardest to get him the help that he needs and learn how to regulate or learn how to, or we'll move him to a better school.
My kid's at a charter school, and I know that, I was going to say my youngest, but I have twins. They're 8. So one of the twins had a lot of stuff going on when she was a baby.
Medically?
Yeah. You might remember this. She had something called IUGR. She was born really small. She was only 2 pounds.
Intrauterine growth retardation.
Growth restriction, it's called now. It's BPC.
Isn't that ridiculous?
So anyway, long story short, she had a lot of behavioral stuff early on, and I had to call it. But I had services for her through the regional center, so she had lots of different therapy. So when I started seeing certain behaviors, she was biting her sister, and not just normal, like somebody tries to take a toy and biting, like crossing the room, going over to her, biting her, and then walking away and like, like who me? You know, and I was like, I just saw you. I had to call in a behavioralist who had to give me some strategies. And anyway, I was concerned that I would still see that behavior because it's like an impulse control.
How long ago was that?
Well, she's 8 now, and that was when she was only probably 2.
Okay. And?
You know, when she started preschool, she was having her first instinct was to hit. And so she wasn't really great at making friends, and there were some social issues. Similar to what you're saying, she kind of worked through that, and then she was fine by the end of that. And now she's fine, although I'm noticing a little bit of learning stuff that I'm taking a look at, and we're going to have a meeting about that. But I was going to say that there are certain kids in this charter school environment that sound like your son, and the way that they deal with it is a little bit, I mean, yeah, they do bring the parents in and they talk to them, but they're very big on like, we're not labeling anybody because it's not, you know, we don't want this kid to be the kid that hits.
I don't know how you felt, but this isn't coming from the school. The school's been very helpful and pointed us in the right direction and helped us and has accommodated this kind of what you'd call treatment plan to help him. It's the other parents. It's the other parents emailing in swarms and talking about my ex-wife and stuff like that. And everybody's losing sight of, here's some kids that feel threatened by my kid, and here's my kid threatening those kids. I want to work as a community and fix this and make it right.
Yeah, I mean,
and
he's 5.
Instead, it's very much like a parent thing almost. And so that's one thing.
Well, you know, parents
on.
Are crazy, right?
Yeah. Well,
you've experienced
these days,
that.
Especially
these days, parents are out of their minds, and they are. It's like they're the ones in school. It's like they're being threatened.
Narcissistic,
I mean, people,
extensions of self.
Yes,
right. That's awful.
Narcissistic.
It's so bad for the kids.
It's so bad. So I think you have to either maybe look at changing schools for next year.
That's
get a fresh
what we're
start.
Gonna get through,
you know,
this year. Here's the thing that the MFT recommended. My son loves rules. Mm-hmm. He's actually the enforcer of rules that kids don't abide by rules.
Right.
And then he's always constantly looking for an adult to help him enforce the rules.
Right.
Right. So, and he loves, reward. So she came up with this thing that when he's having one of those situations where he feels out of control, or he's going to use his hands or body or do something, that if he goes and talks to an adult and asks for help and say that he's struggling and that he feels like he wants to hit somebody, he gets a star. And if he gets 3 stars, he gets screen time at night at home, right? iPad.
Right, right, right.
He loves that.
So it's working.
Yeah, it's working. The corrective action is working. But you're living on eggshells. Like another thing happened after what's happened. And
right.
There was another one?
No, there was an episode early on where he pushed a kid down. And then this newest episode.
And what is your... It's almost impossible for us to rely enough on mother's instincts. So I'm wondering what his mom thinks about it.
You know, she feels the same way I do. This transition that he doesn't transition well. And it's our fault. That we thought it would be better for him to get into public school and really rabble around and get around.
But
other
he wasn't
kids.
On the he wasn't on the young side, right?
He's the
appropriate
young.
Age for kinder.
No, he's young. He turned 5 in October.
Okay.
So, and the class has 6-year olds in it.
Yeah. Cause my kids are November birthdays, all three of them. And they did start late. So they were going on 6 when they started kindergarten.
I think
it
we're
going to
repeat kindergarten.
Repeat kindergarten. Absolutely. Yeah. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Because I think kids, I think it's more the norm these days. That's more the aberration to start. That's young. And then
well,
he's especially for boys.
Here's my theory.
He's at a disadvantage socially.
You can't underappreciate what you do for a living. I deal with 18 to 34-year-olds who are dying of drug addiction. So a lot of times my fear is I don't want him being 18 his entire year of high school. For some reason, that do you know about this?
No.
At 18, you're an adult. You don't have to go to high school.
Well,
you can write your own excuses from class. And if I know anything about myself, my mother and my genetics, 18 in the senior year of high school is not the best for a forest. Do you understand what I'm saying, Drew?
But that thinking is a little bit off because first of all, you're way in the future now. And Second of all, if he doesn't want to go to school, if he's 17, he's not going to go to school. Like you're not 18, you have to go to school. So I think if all his friends, he's going to be coming up with a group of friends, hopefully he's going to be with his peer group. If they're all going to school, he's going to go to school. He's not going to be like, I don't have to, I'm 18. I would do what's right for him now.
The male brain matures so late. It really, I mean, so many things I look at that I couldn't handle were things I handled well 2 years later. It's just the male brain.
Yeah, all the boys at my kid's school are insane. They are. It's all the boys are the ones that have the behavior problems and they're hyper and crazy and hitting or doing those things. It's all the girls are like, what is happening over there?
That's going to be throughout.
We're all so mature.
That's throughout your children's life. That's going to be the case.
Yeah.
It later becomes war and other things that we do.
Yeah.
That women go, what the hell?
It's true, though, but it's been a trying few months, that's for sure.
Yes.
Because you're thinking, oh, you're going to this idealized world, and it's going to be so great, and then there's just, wow.
Maybe you ought to go backwards, go back to the school.
That's what I wanted to do, and now everybody's recommending that he's been in this school for 3 months, and then we rip him out, and then he's taught failure, and da-da-da-da-da. You can get any kind of advice in the world in this town.
What does he want to do?
He wants the older boys to like him. I had a really great talk with him when we were by ourselves a couple of weeks ago. He goes, why don't they like me? And I said, Elvis, you're like so much younger than them. You'll know when you're older. You don't want to hang out with, and I said to baby Ever, who's 2.5, who's like he grew up with, he doesn't want wanting to play with a 2.5-year-old.
Right.
And so he kind of gets it and kind of doesn't. He just wants to be liked by these older kids, by these cooler kids.
We were talking an episode about...
How about that? At 5, you're worried about the cooler kids.
Yeah, I know.
Oh!
Well, we were talking about bullying on a previous episode. That must be something you guys deal with all the time.
No,
crying out loud, I imagine. That's sort of a topic.
Well, I had just talked to Lynette last week about the fact that my older daughter, who's just turned 11, she's so young. Like, she's just the greatest kid. She's, you know, the floor model, right? That one. Then the twins came along and like wrecked all that. But Elby, my oldest one, is so sweet and she's very innocent and happy kid, loves everybody. And she's been in this basketball group and a couple of these. So there's a whole mixture of ages in this basketball group and she's one of the younger ones. And one of these older girls said to her out of nowhere, you're gross. And because apparently, because she wasn't wearing a bra, which she doesn't have anything to put in a bra. We have not bought her a bra. And she said, why? And the girl said, you're not wearing a bra. And not that's gross. You're gross. Mm-hmm. And she'd never experienced that before. And then she wasn't crying about it, but she was upset and she felt, that's not bullying.
The beginning.
Oh, I know, but I'm saying it's very jarring. It was jarring to me that like, oh, this is what
12
because we go to a very sweet 12, school.
You look around a seventh grade class, and some of the kids are young women, and some of them are little children. So there's the onset of puberty issues that start becoming crazy.
Here's one. What do you think? Just real quick before I forget. So I was told by an actual therapist that I respect, one of the four that we're dealing with, that really the first 5 years are just about learning socialization.
Oh, my God, no. Jesus Christ.
K through five years of school? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's really not about math and English.
Yeah,
and
I thought you meant the developmental process of the first 5 years.
It's just about learning how to tolerate and understand and be with and adjust to change.
Not these days. You're talking about like first, like grades?
K through five, yeah.
Yeah, no.
That there's it's about a lot of, socialization.
There's a lot of learning going on.
Yeah, reading becomes a big
reading
thing.
Reading is huge.
Big thing.
Reading.
Nobody reads.
Oh.
Yeah, they do
No,
now.
They don't. Yes. I live in America. No, they don't.
Well, maybe they don't. But you know what? We're trying to change all that. Yeah. We're really trying to change all that.
But the question is, why are more and more kids becoming addicted and killing themselves if we're changing everything?
Speaking of just to make a sidebar about your reading comment, do you know what the number one, I think I mentioned this to you the other day, the number one category of books sold in America last year? By far.
Drawing.
Coloring books killed everything else.
So nobody reads. I read. Catholic school. You had to read.
So what's,
I read,
what's causing,
and I'm an addict.
So what's causing the deaths and the horrible addiction we're seeing? That was the question.
An inability to understand that the world is not wonderful and pretty all the time, and the world is, you have to prepare for this world that is very harsh and not a lot of opportunity, and as narcissistic parents, we want to protect our children from that truth.
We don't let them fail.
Our dads did not care about us knowing that truth. He and I's dads.
No.
Here's this thing that Drew, we've talked about before. Yeah. I feel like when LB was told she was gross, of course, I found it to be a little triggering because I was bullied. I had a terrible time in junior high. They don't even call it junior high anymore. Everybody hated it so much. I think they changed the name of it so that we wouldn't all feel bad.
Seventh and eighth.
Junior high was the worst 2 years. It was seventh and eighth when I was in when I was there, and I was bullied every day, like the real kind of bullying, not what we call bullying now, but like where people would chase me down the hall and say they're going to kick my ass and kick in my locker and tell me I'm disgusting and, you know, pulling knives on me. I mean,
but she
it
is
was
triggered
the worst.
By him.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is definitely a part of me as a mom with these three kids that I want. Of course,
that.
I don't want them to go through that. I know I can't completely protect them, but you're going to be damn sure that I'm going to find a school that has the best possibility of them not, like, I'm not going to throw them to the wolves like my parents threw me to the wolves.
No, it's got to be something between what our parents did and what we've been doing, because what we've been doing doesn't work for preparing people for adulthood. It doesn't. I deal with them every day. And so somehow how we introduce the unfairness of life, right? For instance, I'm sure you're familiar with, everybody gets a trophy, right? My oldest son, I have a 28-year-old. He's 15, doesn't care about basketball, wanted to play basketball because I love basketball, and his best friend loved basketball, and his best friend played basketball every day, 3 hours a day. So I and one of my oldest friends, a guy in my band, have son the same age, this boy, we coached the team, they played, my son was horrible. He doesn't care about basketball, he just wanted to be on the team. So we'd put him in to foul the best player on the other team.
Mm-hmm.
At the award ceremony dinner at Shakey's, Round Pizza, whatever it's called. What's the
Round Table?
Round Table Pizza in Silver Lake. Everybody gets the same trophy, and we're driving home, and my son's looking at his trophy, and he goes, "Dad, I don't even care about basketball, and I don't practice. And Bo practices all the time, and he loves basketball, and he's our best player, and he's one of the best players in the whole league. And I get the same trophy as him? That's fucked up."
Hey, but you should commend him for seeing the unfairness of that.
Yeah.
But he could see what we as parents couldn't see.
I think that I agree with you, although then there's these people that want to take it away from even the younger kids. I think...
What
you
is
know,
that? Oh, Drew wants to know about that.
Take what away?
Take the awards. Everybody gets a trophy away from the younger. I think, you know what?
Nobody if gets a gonna, trophy is next.
Participation.
Communism, Drew. Communism.
Whatever happens, just
if they're little,
most valuable, most improved, best fill-in-the-blank
Okay, so that's how we do it. That's how we do it at our little park league, right? The kids play basketball. The coach, they all get a trophy, and the coach says something about the player and what they did, and you're the most improved, and you're the this. When they're little kids, when they're eight and up, I can understand they don't need a trophy. But when they're little kids, why can't they have a trophy?
Because that's where it really gets in their heads. You don't want to see you're making the mistake that most parents make, which is I can't stand to see my kid disappointed. That's you. His kid needed to see the kid that he admired elevated. That feels good. When somebody's
and there, but he and was older say, at that time,
yes,
right?
He was 15.
Older. But I think that's
but
different.
Let me tell you the other interesting thing. My son is a genius musician, and the other boy was not, but wanted to play music. And it was very obvious then who can play and who can't.
Right.
And my son tried to help him become better, give him tips or whatever. That's how we have a society that works. When somebody has strengths, you learn from them. You don't act like everybody's equal and everybody has the
right.
same
I agree.
Strength.
I agree with you.
We have to decide when we're going to introduce that to our children.
Listen, I think they get it in other ways. Like, for instance, all my kids are into drama, too. They all do plays. And everybody can't be the lead. You know, you can't have, like, can't do the Wizard of Oz and have 12 Dorothys, right? People have to get other roles, and they audition them.
That's
and
good.
Guess what? My daughter learned early on. She did her little audition, and she did not get, even though she'd been with this one company for a few years, she didn't get the lead role. She got a role that she didn't want. And you know what? There was that little part of me, bad part, that
That's
wanted
right.
to call him up and go, how come, you know? And I was like, of course I didn't do that. I was like, Albie, sometimes you get the lead role, yeah. and most of the time you don't.
That's right.
And she adjusted, and she did a great, she See? Acted the shit out of that
That's
role.
Good. I like that. How old was she?
And it was great. I don't know, 8?
I think kids are very savvy. I mean, they know when they're being bullshitted.
Yeah.
And it does not elevate their self-esteem to give them a trophy. It give them a participation
Isn't it
certificate.
Wrong? If it elevated their self-esteem, it's wrong to do that because
well,
life's going to smack
way,
them in the
way
face.
Way too much on the self-esteem thing. By the way, I think having
All the kids I deal with that are 19, 22 that live with me, the recovering addicts that just got out of treatment, I have a sober living, they have far too much self-esteem for what low-functioning people they are.
I agree with you, but
I think we're worried about the wrong thing.
Listen, I have low self-esteem, and it helps me. It keeps me driving and moving and pushing, and I have terrible self-esteem.
So
now,
why did we become lowest?
I think mine's even lower.
Mine is. Look.
Why did we become a self-esteem-motivated society?
Because it's awful and painful to have low self-esteem, and we wanted to not have our kids go through that. But it has a purpose, but low self-esteem keeps you driving, keeps you moving, keeps you trying
Let's
to be better.
Let's give our true narrative.
I
think, I have a theory,
yeah.
which I'm sure you've heard before, but I think a lot of us had these childhoods, right, from maybe the 70s. Not everybody's my age, but a lot of us older parents these days, you know, in the 70s, I heard you talking about this on a previous episode, but latchkey kids, you know, yeah. I was the opposite. You know, my mom was very critical. I was left alone from a young age. I was taking care of myself and letting myself
out. There's where the bullying came in, though. That's where the kids saw the vulnerability in you, and that's they went after. Right? You were in pain all the time.
Nobody had your back.
I think there's a lot of us, right, that went on, had some trauma as kids, became parents, and said, I'm going to do things differently.
Yep.
And then we went overboard
Absolutely.
And tried
That's
to save them
That's
from any kind of pain.
100%.
And then we have to pull ourselves back.
Because we're so much better than our parents.
Right.
We are such better parents.
So sometimes Absolutely. I have to consciously allow my kids to feel pain.
Oh,
and I have to absolutely stop myself. And it's my instinct is to fix it. And I have to go, that would not be helpful.
And not just the pain.
Allow them to feel sad, feel pain,
boredom,
disappointment.
Boredom.
Yeah.
And whatever negative affect they have to kind of deal with or amuse themselves or find something to do or all that stuff.
Right.
That's good.
Right.
That's good for them to feel that stuff.
And to not rescue. So what I deal with
is
I try to coach not to rescue.
I know I'm saying I'm Mr. Rescue. It's so hard for me.
But what I'm doing now is mostly coaching parents. They just need support. Like, he's 22. He crashed a car. He can call an insurance company all on his own. He has a phone. He can call a drug dealer. I'm sure he can call an insurance company. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You need that support as a parent who's constantly been trying to shield life or shield consequence or shield bad things from your child. And I'm telling you, it's just my corner of the block. The recovery industry exploits that.
Sure.
That if you pay us enough money, we're going to fix your kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's hard. I'm sure it's hard for parents, especially if they're not addicts themselves.
But I love the fact
to not be codependent, to not enable them.
Of course, they're codependent.
They think they're going to fix it, and they don't realize they're not, and they don't realize they're harming.
But
the most often narrative I hear is, "My dad was an alcoholic. I got into drugs, but I got out of it, and now this, my third generation is just, what in the fuck is wrong with him? Why can't he stop?" You know what I mean? He's just like my father. That kind of narrative from boys, grandfather to father to son. And that kind of pulled yourself up and stopped taking drugs.
Yeah.
That's what this generation is saying about their 20-somethings.
They should just stop?
Yeah. They should. I smoked weed in college. And I try to say, well, then you either don't have the gene or you're a workaholic and to be continued.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That's one of the things I think happens. People go to college. They want to succeed coming out of those trauma, alcoholic households. They can't indulge their drugs and alcohol because they need to succeed and make millions of dollars. When they do, all hell's going to break loose when they retire.
They'll start using.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could be. That could be.
Now we're saying that, okay, so if you have trauma as a kid, maybe you end up becoming an addict.
Right.
But then if you don't have any trauma, because if we're over-parenting and making sure they feel no pain, they're going to become addicts.
But like, life will traumatize them.
Some people are going to become addicts and some people are just not.
I realize this. You said that's interesting. I deal with parents all the time.
Only one thing?
The thing about your daughter is precious in this. My son is precious and special to me. I don't know that he's special and precious to everybody. There's something about us when we say special and we want that to be factual, that everyone understand that.
Yeah.
People find That's him irritating narcissism. And like kind of too much and don't like him the way I like him or see him the way I see him. And we as parents, I think, need to understand that we see our children a certain way because they're our children.
No, it's always important to ask about other people's perceptions and things too, because it informs you. You just can't see certain
stuff. You know what? Every time I've asked some peer or friend what they think of Elvis, they say, you spoil him.
Oh, interesting.
So I've stopped that.
Interesting. That's interesting.
And you know what? I thought it would create this terrible monster. It doesn't. All he really needs is a piece of paper and a crayon.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But somehow I thought, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and we got this, and we got that.
But Stephanie, you mentioned, you know, some just become addicts without trauma, and that's certainly true. But the effects of trauma across generations is protean. It has many different sort of tentacles attached to it. And so any reaction to the trauma is transmission of the trauma. So by compensating for the trauma to prevent trauma is communicating trauma.
Right.
It's doing the opposite of what the kid needs. The kid needs the middle.
Right.
So we were traumatized. Well, that's never going to happen. So we overindulge. We enmesh. We do all the crazy shit that I'm sure those parents that you're talking about, Bob. And that's not what they need.
How much of a percentage of young people do you think are struggling with the idea of suicide? Is there
percentage?
Any
percentage? That number's out there, I'm sure.
It's way bigger than it was when I was a teenager.
Yeah, I think it's pretty.
Right.
Yeah.
So at a certain point, a lot of the kids threaten suicide. And that just frightens the parents so much. What if your
kid
kills
himself?
In fact,
I think I just saw some data yesterday that teen suicide was up still.
But I think the threats are through the roof.
Maybe.
Who does it? I think it's become common as a way of explaining a feeling state of hopelessness, frustration, inability to understand the world does not care about me.
And also there's a lot of copycat because you can see it on the internet. You hear kids talking about it. That stuff.
Suicide.
That's infectious. Yeah.
Yeah. And so somehow you have to be able to live with that.
Yeah.
Like I have a lot of kids. Most of the kids I'm dealing with have told their parents one time or another, I'll just go kill myself.
Well, addicts say that shit all the time though.
Well, there's...
yeah, I mean, that's just...
I said that to my mom.
I was going to say.
Did you really?
Well, but I will tell you that I was really, really depressed. I hadn't ever said it before. When I was 18, my best friend got hit by a car.
Died. Oh.
Yeah. I had just moved to LA. I'd been here 6 weeks. I was living in that apartment on El Cerrito. I was doing phone sales. I'd had a job for literally 6 weeks.
How old were you?
I was 18. My friend.
Wait, you moved out here by yourself?
Yeah, with another friend. But my best friend was back home. We were going to go to UMass together, and I decided not to go. We were going to go be roommates.
Amherst?
Yeah.
Did I know that?
I didn't go.
Yeah, but still, where were you living?
Springfield.
Do I know that?
No, I don't think so. Why?
Because I went to Amherst College. I lived there. I lived in, and my son went to Amherst College. I mean, we spent a lot of time in the Pioneer Valley.
Oh.
A lot of time.
Basketball Hall of Fame. How weird is that?
Yeah, the Basketball Hall of Fame is right there. That, I went to the old Basketball Hall of Fame. Now it's a pretty fancy thing. I'm sure you remember.
And the Heroin Highway goes through there now.
Yeah.
Really?
Springfield's looking a little better these days, by the way. It was a shithole.
It was awful. Whoa. When I lived there. Yeah. 1984, yeah. 1982 to 84. Yeah, it was
But anyway,
not
I'm sorry.
Nice.
So you're afraid we're going to go to UMass.
Yeah, so I decided not to go. I moved to LA on my own with just a friend. And I was working at this phone sales job and I got the call. My friend died. I called home. I didn't have any money. I moved. My mom gave me a couple $100 and I had worked at a bunch of restaurants and then quit them like in a day or two trying to get some cash. And then I had like $900 to my name when I moved to LA. I had no money. I had to go home for this funeral. My mom said, first she said no. And I kind of lost my mind a little bit. And anyway, she ended up giving me tickets, but she said they're not going to be they're going to be round trip. Like things were not good between me and my parents. But anyway, came back. I went to this home, flew home at 18, went to this funeral. I mean, just the saddest thing ever. This was my best friend. Like, we used to sleep over at each other's house all the time. It was traumatic that I'd even moved away from her. And I just hit a really, really low point. And I remember.
Were you drinking then?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I was also bulimic at the time. And I remember talking to my mom. I felt like I couldn't work. I felt non-functional.
Depressed, yeah.
I was depressed. And I told my mom, I've just been thinking about suicide. I just don't know what to do. I'm out of ideas.
You just want the
pain to stop. Yeah. And she said, well, I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know what to tell you.
Oh.
Go to church. Go to church. Do something.
It's brutal.
I remember thinking, like, that's it. I got to figure this out on my own.
But what did you do? You got pissed and you came back to LA.
Well, I had already come back to LA. I was living back in LA, but just like sort of non-living.
How'd you pull out of that?
You know, here's the thing. I've always been an optimist. I had a pretty hard time of it growing up, but I always had this sense that like, things are going to get, I don't know. I just had this little, there was a little piece of me that was like, I'm going to figure this out. It's going to get better.
Well, that is a piece, by the way, that's also missing. We have not talked about this, Bob, but that's missing in your population too. And the fact is that moods do get better.
You know, I hate to say it. You know what I hate to say? Even the most apathetic kids are kind of excited about Bernie Sanders. I hate to tell you. Kids who've never cared about politics at all, I go in the living room and they're watching him. And something he's saying, not the Trump hatred thing, something that Bernie Sanders is saying rings with these kids.
I think it's he speaks with authority. He reminds me of
like a grandpa.
Every good
like a kind grandpa,
uncle, or every good professor I've had, he just it's Socratic. He just going, how come it's not like this? Why is it like that? What are we going to do about that? I really admire that about him.
But when you see three 20-year-old drug addicts watching Bernie Sanders talking, you're like, wow, maybe there is hope. Just that they're listening,
not that Sanders' agenda is hope.
I knew you were going to do that, you old Reagan Democrat. But I'm an independent now, just so you know. Not that he has the solutions, but that they're wanting a solution. Because I didn't think they even cared.
Well, maybe there's time for an opportunity. Ugh. It maybe they're fertile soil for a movement, and maybe that movement, I hope that movement is good. You know what I mean? That's how shit happens in society.
Well, they all, at a basic core level, believe everything is corrupt.
Where'd they get that message?
Because it is.
They're cynical.
They're cynical.
Politics,
yeah.
Business, the whole decks are stacked against them.
But what does that mean?
That we as baby boomers have let things happen, that we all know that this government is bought and sold by petroleum and big pharmacy. If you don't, Drew, come on.
Bought and sold by the
when the Koch brothers spend $500 million and Obama gets $1 billion to become president of the United States. You don't think that somehow
If that's what they intend, he fucked them over pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
that's because he's doing the bidding of who gave him the $1 billion. You don't think that?
No.
The insurance industry.
I said Obama fucked over the Koch brothers pretty good.
Oh, I know. But he didn't fuck under the insurance industry, did he? He made them trillions of dollars with his bullshit Obamacare.
I paid $1,360 a month. I heard you talking about this on another podcast about giving up. I can't give up insurance because I have three kids.
Yeah.
I pay $1,360 a month.
Is it
and
as
I
good as it
I
was
make
before?
Too much money to get any worse. Break in my premium.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's because an Stephanie, insane amount of money. I could have a kid in private school
this
for
is
that
the,
money.
This is what bothers me.
And this is not for the best insurance.
Hang on
this
a second.
Yeah.
This is what bothers me. I'm going to say something that I hear from the kids that you're now sort of admiring them, admire Bernie.
Just that they care.
No, you don't see them
care
here's
about
the,
a lot.
Here's what they say to me. Here's what they say to me. Well, Stephanie, you need to pay your fair share. You just need to pay your fair share. You're not paying your fair share. I keep thinking, what is the fair share?
What is my fair share? I'm paying it.
How much of everything?
I'm paying $404 just for myself.
But the fair share, you pay 60% of income tax. You pay crazy amounts for insurance.
Right.
What is your fair share? I'm confused by this.
Well, what Bernie Sanders is saying is, you guys are getting fucked. If you make $500,000 in this country, you're getting fucked. It's the people that are making $100 million a month, the corporations that don't pay any taxes. Right. That's what we need to change.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But they want it to change. Corporations ask for it to change, and yet they never change it. It's weird.
Hey.
You know what I wanted to ask you guys about since I'm here? I was listening to another podcast, and this came up. And this is completely off the topic, but it
Please.
Has to do with...
It's time
I,
we got
I think
off
it
this.
Has to do with. I think it has to do with addiction. And I don't know if this has to do with 20-year-old addicts, but they were talking on this podcast about emotional molestation, which I had never thought about this before because I was not molested as a kid. But then they were describing what that is, and I was like, oh my God, I had that.
Yeah.
Which is when you feel sorry for a parent. That's how it was described to me. And all of a sudden, I made this really intense connection to the fact that I always had a horrible time with intimacy, either needed to only be pining. And if the person, the object of my affection, liked me back, then I was done.
Yeah.
I mean, very quickly.
Right.
Like if I even made out with a guy the night before and then he called me the next day and was into it and like, hey, when can I see you again? It was like, oh, never mind. Don't like you anymore. And I put it together because my father, my biological father, was a mess, you know, drug addict, and would have these conversations with me where he would say, like, you're my only friend.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't have anybody but you.
Whenever they say, you're my little man, you're my little girl.
You're my only friend, he would tell me.
You're
all
wifey,
I have.
You're wifey.
You're all I have. Yeah. And one time he got hit by a car.
That's incest.
And I would cry and tell my mom, like, you have to help me. You have to go see him. And this was like through my whole life because he would be in and out of my life.
To get you
and
to do his bidding for him.
Yeah, and he would always say, he always needed money or needed like, but he would say, you're all I have. That's it. I have no friends except for you.
How old were you?
The whole time. My parents got divorced when I was four. And then even when I cut him off when I was an adult.
Good.
With the help of therapy. But then I felt like if I don't help him, he's going to be homeless.
Right. Or die, which is the other fantasy they always play on. Right.
Well, okay. So one time when I was older, when I was already with my now husband, he called me and he said, I hadn't talked to him in like 6 years. I told him to stop calling me because he would get my phone number and then he would call me at work and he would be high and he would forget that he called me. So he would call me again 20 minutes later. Hey, Steph.
Sheesh.
Just calling to say hi. What's shaking? When can I see you? And I was make these rules. Like I'm going to go to lunch with him, but once every 2 weeks. And that's all I can do.
Yeah.
And then he would always want more. Okay. Long story short, one day he called me and he said, I hadn't talked to him in a long time. He called and he said, listen, I'm things are really bad and I don't have any money and I can't pay my rent. And if I don't get some money, I think I'm going to off myself. So
wow,
I called him back.
That is emotional.
Right.
Blackmail.
But I honestly hadn't made the connection to growing up with that feeling of like, I didn't want any men to be too much. I didn't want to feel responsible for anybody's feelings ever. So as soon as I would start dating somebody and they would like me too much, or I'd feel any sort of neediness
You'd
from
feel
them
that.
Or weakness, I was done. And it was really, really hard to get over, but I'd never heard it talked about that way. And
Pia Melody talks about stuff like that.
Who does?
Pia Melody. Haven't I told you about her stuff before?
No.
She's writes a lot about love and sex addiction and things, and just read her stuff. Even some of her like stuff online. Pia Melody.
But that's a thing, right? The emotional model. Is that like a real thing?
It's incest. Yeah. It's a form of incest.
Yeah. No one ever told me growing up that that was wrong. Like, you know, my mom wouldn't.
So anything without boundaries. Stop that. Anytime there are no boundaries, that is an assault on the child.
Yeah, so I've always just been so scared of having to feel sorry for
somebody.
But
then look at the what strikes me, you know, him coming at you and wanting you to do his bidding for you, but your mother not protecting you away from him. That's another
form.
Well,
my mom had, her boundaries were too good. My mom had the opposite problem. Serious boundaries.
But you weren't, it sounds like you weren't inside them.
No.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Inside their
the
hearts.
Mother had a boundary to her child.
Yeah.
No emotional.
Let her in, yeah.
Right.
No letting you
in. And
then
the dad had no boundaries. He was flowing into her.
So right. I bet you felt more connected to him than her.
No. Well, it's complicated. My mom got remarried like 6 months after the old one was out. she was moved in with a new one, and they're still together. But that became.
Was he relatively healthy, I hope?
No.
Oh, dear.
Very, very unhealthy.
Oof. Well, it's a miracle you're up and
walking.
More
unhealthy than, yeah.
Yeah.
Look at
that. Good for you.
Figured it out.
And all the therapy and stuff's worked?
You know, not really.
How
quitting drinking worked.
Well, that's part of what got you to quit drinking, I imagine. No?
Well, I didn't quit drinking until I was 42.
Took what it took.
Perfect age.
Yeah.
Good age, right? I don't know what to tell all your 20-year-olds.
I know.
I don't know
out on 22 years of drinking.
I know. I can't imagine trying to tell a 20-year-old that it's time to stop, even if
hard.
How are they going to like?
And a lot of them have stories, you know, of pain like you had to experience. That's a painful story. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying I would never have been interested in quitting at 20.
That's right.
You couldn't have told me.
I don't think these guys are interested either. They just have parents that are interested in them quitting.
And they
I
have
know,
an industry
but they,
praying
you can't
on
quit because your parents are interested in you quitting, right?
That's his point.
Right. So how do you?
That means
what do you do
that
with them?
Parents wanting adult children to get sober meets criteria for admission into an inpatient treatment center.
That's right.
That's what drives Drew nuts.
Yeah, but he's working on the parents now.
Yeah, trying to coach them.
So the parents, the key is for the parents to step away.
To start slowly and do what they can where they are.
To bottom out.
Yeah, just kind of not black, white, 100% zero. More like, let's go back 20%. Let's just let them figure it out. Slowly but surely starting to build that boundary, right? Rather than here's the boundary, go die.
I just want to vote for another season of Celebrity Rehab.
Me too.
Well,
how can I do my part in getting that going again? Favorite show ever.
Called
a lot of people's favorite show ever.
Irwin Entertainment. See if they can. I don't think VH1 would do it again.
Somebody else will.
You think? Oh, it's so much work.
Well, if they do the celebrity couples therapy, why won't they do
that's
Celebrity
Irwin
Rehab?
That's Irwin does that.
I know. Yeah. They do it, and it's on VH1.
Yeah. We'll figure it out.
I think the reason...
Everything old is new again, Drew.
I will propose that the reason they do that is that the producers are allowed to do whatever they want with those subjects, and there's no expensive aftercare. Our patients need a shit ton of aftercare.
Right.
I already told them how to do it in a cost-effective way.
A GoFundMe.
That it be shot at a rehab that gets all the promo for the rehab, and the rehab continues the aftercare for free as a part of.
How about Rocky Mountain
Rehab?
Rocky Mountain Rehab.
You and I know.
Now you're thinking like a podcaster.
But the problem is we would have to have control over who staffed that, because it's just not the average thing. And they won't put up with it. They won't. You have to chase them. You have to keep after them.
That's our codependency, though.
Yeah. Why do you have to? You gave them rehab.
Because
why do you have to chase them for their aftercare?
We work harder. We work harder than the patients, oftentimes.
Well, you can't work harder than the patients, but you give them. But you're not offering aftercare. If you do it, then you go, here's the place.
Yes.
Where you check in.
No, that's
here's
right.
your counselor.
That's true.
Doors always open.
You know,
I don't think they do months and months of it. I just don't think they would. They all insisted on outpatient. Well, some did some sober living. It's very frustrating, very difficult.
Well,
but anyway,
then
I'd be
willing to
do it.
Sober house.
I'd be willing to do it.
Right? You're with your Jennifer. Yeah, yeah.
What I hate about the program though is
whatever happened to Shelly? Where's Shelly?
At PRC, she still works there.
She's going to come up here. She's going to come on an episode soon, right, Susan?
Shelly fans here too.
We're gonna have it.
She's the best.
We're gonna do it someday.
But
I know you're trying to get rid of me.
No, we have to wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
But I just can't stand being responsible for people's death who don't participate in treatment. They're gonna die, and I can't do anything about that.
Right.
And so every day,
but you can't. But they got into
every day.
They got in the first place because of you.
I have to look at a Twitter feed every day that compares me to Mengele and killing patients and being an active murderer. Every day I have to read that
because
stuff.
You got them treatment.
That's subsided now.
No, I'll pull it up right
recently?
Now.
Recently,
it's every day.
Subsided now.
But you know how the internet is.
I'm just saying, I'm tired of it. It's tiring. It grinds you down.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying. I'm looking at my Twitter feed.
True. Stop. You're like Paris Jackson. Stop looking.
Well, you could do rehab without the celebrity factor.
We did that.
I know.
No one watched.
So bring
they
it
all
back.
They all ended up in prison.
I watched
Those were very hard. Those were a lot of work, too.
A lot of them ended up in prison. None of them have died, though.
Oh. Yeah.
And some are doing really well, too.
Yeah,
right?
Some are doing great.
Yeah.
But no, it'll be back. I've been around long enough to see every band that broke up except for the Smiths get back together. Guns N' Roses is back together.
I know. It's true.
It's crazy. So celebrity
The Replacements. We just went to see The Replacements.
Right.
My husband and I. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And your relationship with your husband has been good and stable. And
very good.
Yeah. In spite of everything.
We've been together
for
going on.
Therapy works. Recovery works.
16 years.
That's the message. So you felt recovery was the most powerful piece of it though, huh?
Well, no. I was with my husband. I only got sober 7 years ago. So I was with him for quite a while before that.
Yeah.
But I think that's what helped me climb out of some of that. It helps me parent. It helps me
be present. You can see things.
Yeah. Because I apologize to my children. You know, it's about, I make little amends. I'm able to do that without enmeshing so much because it's not all about me and my emotions and how I'm feeling all the time. And am I stressed? It's about, it's about them because I'm here.
It's an important, very
important.
You know,
kids are here.
That's sort of been the theory, the theme of tonight's show.
I'm doing waves.
That's the important piece. So where can people find you again? Give all the particulars.
I'm pretty much ready to give up on Twitter because I really have very few Twitter followers. But S. Wilder Taylor. I'll tweet a little. I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
I Facebook a lot.
Facebook's the way, Drew.
And Facebook is for the 40-something moms. That's what we're all about Facebook.
Calling out?
For crying out loud.
For crying out loud, yes.
Please
calling
listen to our podcast and your wife's podcast, too. Listen
calling
to that,
out,
too.
Yes, of course.
And,
For crying out loud, is it at its own website or at Corolla.com?
It's at Corolla Digital.
Okay, Corolla
Digital. Yeah, that's about it.
All right, and... be sure to support this podcast as well. Click through the Amazon
Rocky
banner.
Mountain Rehab.
Yeah, get yourself
Mountain
in there. Get some
Rocky
treatment.
Mountain Treatment.
Well, FirstDoctor.com and ThisLifePodcast.com. You can click through the Amazon banner, support the shows, support the people that support these things, including our friends at Rocky Mountain Rehab. You go ahead and talk about them.
Well, I'm going to go up there and see them. It's my excuse to go to Montana.
And I've spoken to them. They seem like the real deal, and they are definitely an abstinence-based.
I'll check in.
No BS program.
Everybody,
for some maintenance?
I know.
Why wouldn't I?
The other thing about those guys that
I'll advertise
them. Is I spoke to some of the non-physician people there, and a lot of them had sort of IDs and degrees of real sophisticated
should be continuing
degrees.
On your education.
That's right. All right, so anyway, that does it. Stephanie Wilder Taylor,
okay.
Thank you so much for
thank
joining
guys.
Us.
Thank
really
you guys. Thank
you so much.
Very fun meeting you.
Maybe come back when Shelly comes in.
I'd love it. I would love it.
All right, we'll see you next time.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
If I can just make it down to Memphis, all my troubles would go away. If I can get down to Memphis, maybe I'll be okay. They got a city that's just waiting to let me open up and bleed. If I can get down to Memphis, well, they've got a place for me. 'Cause that's where people go, you know, when they've got nothing left to lose, yeah. That's where you end up down there when you've got nothing better to do. If I can just make it down to Memphis, maybe I could pull through, though.
I can just make it down to Memphis, maybe I could pull through. Well, Elvis, hi Elvis, you never meant a fucking thing to me. If I can get down to Memphis, well, I'll be the king. They got a river, runs right through there. Well, maybe I'll just take a swim. If I can get down to Memphis, I'll start all over again. 'Cause that's where people go, you know, when they ain't got nothing left to lose, yeah. That's where you end up down there when you've got nothing better to do. If I can just make it down to Memphis, maybe I can pull through, Lord. If I can just make it down to Memphis, maybe I can pull through.
Make it down to me.